Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, we talk all about gastrointestinal issues that can arise from eating disorders, whether that is restriction, binging, purging. We go into detail talking about the issues that can occur and how this can lead to IBS-like symptoms, and also how you can navigate this in your recovery to make sure that the bloating and discomfort that you're experiencing isn't something that holds you back for your recovery.
So, very nice to see you again. So, just for the listeners, if they've not heard of you, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my name is Priya Chu, and I am an eating disorders specialist dietitian. I worked in the NHS for quite a number of years in eating disorders, and then I moved into private practice after I had started having children. And I now work with one-to-one clients, and I also run a 12-week eating disorder recovery course where we work in group coaching and we work in community together. It's called the Recovery Tribe, and I absolutely love it. I think it's a fantastic way of people just realizing that they're not alone and getting support in a more cost-effective way as well, because one-to-one sessions can be expensive. I also work with the media, so you see me popping up in the newspaper and on the radio and sometimes on the television as well, and I love that bit of my work. And I work with brands, so quite often I will be working with kind of gluten-free brands or food brands, supporting them with getting evidence-based nutrition messages out there, because I'm all about evidence-based, actual, correct nutrition messengers getting out to the public rather than some of this other rubbish that we see creeping in social media.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. Such a good intro. I loved what you said about kind of the evidence-based information, and that's why I love your Instagram page so much, because you put on there, you know, your dietetic insights and really debunk a lot of myths, I think, and there are so many at the moment. I wondered, I guess, just to start us, what do you think is your favorite myth at the moment that you're like, oh my god, that was so fun, or like, that one just, I can't believe that it actually made it to people believing it?
I don't know if I'd call any of them my favorite, because they actually really roll me up, so I get really,
that's probably the wrong word to use, the one that you hated the most then, maybe.
It's definitely the opposite. If you ever see me flicking through on social media, I literally shout at my phone going, I can't believe this is actually happening. What is going on? So I find it intensely frustrating that people who are not qualified nutritional professionals, that's with at least a degree in nutrition, are able to share this information, and it just goes viral. So I think, I mean, the latest one for me has been that fruit is not natural. That one, I was just like, I'm sorry, what? It grows on a tree. It's perfectly natural. And then we shouldn't be eating fruit. And I think that's the most ridiculous message, because I think eating fruit and vegetables is one of the things that we have the most evidence on. We have got so many studies that show us the benefits of eating fruit. And yes, it contains sugar, but so do lots of other foods, and our bodies need sugar. So yeah, that's definitely been the one that's been my bugbear of late.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about sugar is really interesting. Just as like an anecdotal story, I went into the shop the other day, and I wanted to have something that had some protein in it. So I got one of those like high protein yogurts, and it was like £3 for £3. And so I was like, oh, I'll get it. Anyway, I went up to the till, and the woman at the till said, oh, these look great. They say low sugar in them. And I was like, oh, yeah, just kind of minding my business. I'm on a no sugar diet at the moment, so I can probably have those. I was like, oh, well, they do have sugar in them. And she was like, oh, yeah, but I can have some sugar. And I was like, oh, you know, like, can you have fruit and stuff? She was like, yeah, because that's real sugar. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, actually, I don't know whether I can have fruit. And I was just like, this is just a really clear example of people kind of jump on these diets because they're trendy and, you know, it's like no sugar. And that, you know, then that kind of makes an alien out of sugar. So you think that that's the right thing to do. But actually people are just so misinformed. And she didn't even have an idea about kind of the diet that she was on that apparently she was following.
And I think it's really easy to be misinformed. It's not that people are stupid or anything like that. There's just such a wealth of misinformation out there. And it occasionally makes us as nutritional professionals question it as well. I see things and go, is that true? And then I have to go away and check it out. Because of the way it's sold and it's marketed, it feels really believable. So, you know, I don't think at all it's people being stupid or just jumping on even the latest trends. Sometimes that could be the case because, you know, I think we all want the best for our bodies. We want to be healthy and look after ourselves. And that, I think, is where it becomes dangerous, is when people are preying on that.
Yeah. I think I don't know if whether this is true, but for me, I think a lot of the time it comes down to the fact that we live in such a diet-centric society. A lot of the time I don't think it is that people want to be healthy and to do things that's going to promote their health. They just want to do things that they think is going to help them to lose weight. And often with that, I think that a lot of the time people that are selling this misinformation, one, there's money involved with it, and two, they have a physique that people aspire towards. So they just think, oh, well, if they're saying that I should do this one thing, then that's obviously going to mean that I'm going to look like them. But then unfortunately what happens is there's a whole host of other things involved, genetics, the diet, the lifestyle, all of this. So then people engage in it, it doesn't work. And so then they jump ship to something else, but they all seem to be quick fixes. Whereas, you know, individuals like yourself, dietitians, nutritionists, the things that you're helping and suggesting with our lifestyle changes, lifestyle interventions that are going to promote longevity. And because it's not that short-term fix, and often you're not selling things that you're not telling, or you're not selling things, you're not telling us things that are going to support weight loss, that's to support your health and lifestyle, people aren't as inclined to listen, which is just, it's so difficult because you're the ones that have the information that is really important and needs to be heard. But it's so hard to get that when you've got all these celebrities like, but just try my 30-day plan and you'll look like me.
That's so true. I think one of the things I've been grappling with recently in my own mind as a dietitian is, how do we make this information interesting? Because let's face it, quite often it's dull. It's sexy new kid on the block. It's not the quick fix. It's not the super interesting thing that you go, oh yes, that sounds great, I've never heard of that before, let's go for it. It's the boring stuff that your mum probably knew, her mum probably knew, you know. And yes, there's a lot of intricate science behind it, but at the heart of it, telling somebody to eat balanced meals doesn't sound that exciting. So if anyone has any great suggestions for how we get make this more interesting, I would love to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it could be getting on board the celebrities that are sending out all this misinformation and getting them involved with dietitians. Because I think part of it does come down to the fact that, you know, they have familiar faces and they create engaging content. But I think, unfortunately, it is that quick fix, sexy nature that we need to bring into dietetics. Something else I wanted to ask about was, you mentioned at the start when you did your intro that you kind of work with brands that are gluten, they sell gluten-free products. And I think gluten is something that there's quite a lot of misinformation. So did you want to explain a bit more as to why you're interested in the gluten-free products?
Well, the gluten-free has specifically been, I mentioned that because it was the last brand I've worked with. So it's kind of in the tip of my mind. Yeah. And it's been Celiac Awareness Month, which is why I've worked specifically with that brand. But also, I'm quite interested in those foods because I'm actually wheat intolerant. So my digestive system, I'm not celiac, and it's not actually gluten I struggle with, but my digestive system is pretty special. And it doesn't like wheat. And I've discovered this over the years. So for the past, over 20 years, I have eaten a wheat-free diet. And I would not recommend it, to be honest. It's been quite a hard journey, especially over 20 years ago, going wheat-free. The free-from aisle was minuscule. You know, you could fit it in one cupboard, pretty much. So the stuff that they sold in the supermarket. So things have improved. And I think I'm quite excited and pleased that the free from section has increased. But I think it's actually increased because more and more people are thinking that they have to eat gluten-free for their health. And we don't want to be cutting foods and food groups out of the diet unnecessarily. So there's just always a warning in the back of my head when someone comes to me and says, oh, I can't eat gluten. I always like to explore, oh, well, why exactly is that? And sometimes it's absolutely right that they can't actually eat that food group or those foods, but it's always good to just explore why.
Yeah. And why do you think that there's a link between like new diet trends and a lot of people cutting out gluten? Because I think I've seen, you know, in quite a lot of cafes and stuff, there'll be like gluten-free products. And I have friends that are celiac, and I actually went to Pizza Express once with her. And if she has a bit of gluten, she's bedbound for a week. Like, she cannot move because of the pain. And we were sat there and she said, oh, you know, please can I have the gluten-free pizza base? And I think because of the normalization of gluten-free, people are not seeing the kind of severity of celiac disease now. And they went to use the same pizza cutter. And she was just like, no, you can't. Like, I can't have any gluten. And they were like, oh, we just thought it was kind of like a dietary choice rather than a condition.
And that's where it gets concerning, doesn't it? Because there are people for whom this is a really serious thing. And it's really, really important for their long-term health that they are not consuming gluten. I'm not one of those people. Like, gluten is something that upsets me, most definitely, or wheat, I should say. But I can tolerate it. You know, it doesn't cause me long-lasting damage. What does happen is, again, like your friend, I will end up quite unwell for a few days. So it's knowing that actually for some people, eating these foods does cause a significant reaction to them. For some people, it's actually a long-term health condition. But for people who are choosing to eat gluten-free because they think it's going to help them lose weight, I think that's a completely different kettle of fish.
Yeah. And would I be right in saying that with most of these, I think you can kind of broad brushstroke here, for most of these trends where it's cutting out a food group, it's not because of the particular food group itself. It's often just because you're cutting out such a large food group, you end up in a calorie deficit rather than, you know, gluten makes you gain weight, or, you know, sugar makes you gain weight, or things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you were to look at the majority of diet trends, they are all about reducing. And when you reduce anything, you're going to reduce overall energy and calories in the diet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad that I got that right. That's good. And just whilst we're talking about the gut, I think that one thing is quite common is people with eating disorders struggling with gastrointestinal issues. So from your experience of working with clients, what sort of impact have you seen that eating disorders might have on the gut? And I guess to think about the whole spectrum of eating disorders, not just restriction there.
It's a really, really good point. I'm actually a dietitian who has specialised in IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and eating disorders for this reason, because I think there is such a huge overlap between people who are suffering with digestive symptoms such as bloating or excess wind, diarrhea, constipation, abdominal pain, reflux, all of these symptoms. And they quite often overlap with eating disorders. And that can go across the whole spectrum of somebody suffering with disordered eating, somebody who's on a restrictive diet, somebody who is binge purging, someone who is binge eating, you know, everything, night eating syndrome, and ARFID as well. Let's not forget that. So what are some of the reasons for this? Well, if you have been on a restrictive diet, for example, then it's highly likely that your whole body system is going to have slowed down in some way. So we know that when you are malnourished, you're not getting enough energy in, or you're undernourished, that it's going to affect your brain, for example, and your cognitive function. It's going to lead to you losing some muscle mass. it's going to lead to your body trying to conserve energy. So it may not pump blood around the body as effectively. So you get the feelings of being quite cold at your peripheries, for example. So therefore, it makes sense it's also going to affect your digestive system. Your digestive system is a muscle, you know? So if we've got muscle wasting going on, it makes sense that it could impact the digestive system. And the digestive system, like everything else, is going to try and conserve energy and may work slower than normal, which could mean that therefore food is not being passed through the system as effectively if it was before. So it's not being digested as well. Therefore, those symptoms of bloating, abdominal pain, feeling like food is just sitting in your system for longer than it did before are all completely valid. And then when you start to eat a little bit more, you know, people say to me, I felt so much better when I wasn't eating as much. Now I'm eating a bit more. All my digestive systems are worse. And unfortunately, yes, that can be the case. That, again, doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It's like the body has to relearn how to digest all over again. And, you know, if you think about weaning a baby, it's hard work. That baby's got to learn how to digest things like blueberries and spinach. And, you know, we get all kinds of side effects from that going on. A lot of wind, a lot of bicycle legs. If you've ever had a baby and they've been struggling with constipation, that's what you do. And it's very similar when the body is working through recovery. And then if we move on to somebody who is binging and purging, then that's obviously going to have an impact on the digestive system as well. Large amounts of food are being consumed, which can be hard for the body to deal with all in one go. And then we can be trying to empty the system using various methods. And then there can be a period of restriction afterwards. So you're putting the whole digestive system just into disarray. Like, what's going to happen next? It's on hyper alert, which, what's the answer here? Well, we want to try and bring it into this place of calm and routine so it knows what's happening. And that's where, again, the regular eating and the routine really comes into play. And it would be the same, again, with binge eating disorder. You know, you may not have the restriction going on, or you may not have the purging going on. But once again, it's this extra strain on the digestive system leading to these symptoms of bloating and abdominal pain and potentially lots of wind and reflux as well. So you can see how there's going to be an impact on the digestive system if we're not eating in this regular routined way.
Yeah. And I think it then makes it so difficult in recovery, because you're like you said, you know, I felt so much better before, and now that I'm eating more, I now feel like this. And I mean, my personal experience, it's been really difficult with body image, because you eat because, you know, you need to eat, and then you get bloated, and then that makes you feel like you've gained loads of weight. But then you're thinking, I don't want to carry on eating, but you know that you need to. So what would your advice be to somebody that maybe at that point now where they're going through recovery, but they're just, you know, the symptoms are so strong that it's maybe putting them off wanting to carry on?
I mean, this is the point where I always say I would love a magic wand. You could just it would be so much easier, because you're like, you've made the decision that actually, yes, I need to work on recovery. I need to get back into regular eating, potentially eating more or eating more routines. And then you start doing it, your symptoms get worse, you feel worse. It's like a real kick in the guts, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I wish that that part could go away, but it's knowing that actually it's a stage that you have to work through. Mm-hmm. It will pass. It does ease. Can't necessarily tell you how long that's going to take, but by going from eating more regularly into restriction or into binge and purging, it makes it worse. So the longer that you can keep yourself consistently eating that routine, the better things are going to be. Mm-hmm. It's trying to really stick with it and use lots of other techniques such as mindfulness and anxiety management techniques and distress tolerance methods in order to help you sit with those feelings. But there are simple things that you can also do to help. So if you're struggling with bloating, for example, then actually things like peppermint tea can be helpful. Actually, there was a study that showed taking Fox's Glacier mints after a meal can help with bloating. Some people find rubbing peppermint oil in a cream on their tummy can help. Things like a hot water bottle can be helpful. Also, what we want to do after a meal is really let the digestive system almost be calm and peaceful so it can do its job easier. And so we can do that by having that distraction time after a meal. So that might be going away and doing a jigsaw puzzle or sitting and reading a book and just allowing the digestive system time to work rather than getting to that anxious state straight after a meal or running around like a headless chicken after a meal doing lots of jobs. Yeah, so it's trying to enable the body to do its job in the best possible way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting what you said about the glacier mint, but also the other things you were saying, like peppermint. Is there something about the mint that then causes the relaxation?
Yes, I mean, it is something that is sometimes used as a medication in irritable bowel syndrome as well. Oh. So something specific.
Is that why things like Gaviscon have like a minty taste to them?
I don't know if that is why it's in Gaviscon specifically, but there are specific peppermint pills, for example, that you can take that can help. So it's a nice little tip, isn't it? But I think, you know, focusing on anything that calms you, so specifically deep breathing techniques can be really good to help in that moment, because we're almost like, you know, you can feel like your digestive system's in knots. You know, I know that even if I was to make some really tight fists right now, I can feel my gut clenching as well. Like as I clench my fist or I clench my jaw, I can feel it in my digestive system. So the more that we can do to calm and release and relax, the more likely it is the body's going to be able to digest better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you, let's say you're having a really busy day or whatever, and you just kind of eat your lunch really quickly, I always then get like, you know, an upset tummy or whatever. And it is, I imagine there's so much of a link between the kind of stress and then the impact that that's having on your food. And as I was just saying that there, I kind of nearly said it, but is there any link or is there any research between the gut microbiome and the impact on eating disorders, or I guess vice versa in terms of eating disorders then impacting the gut microbiome?
Well, if you were somebody who is on a restrictive diet, then you're likely to have cut out a whole pile of foods that are going to help your gut bacteria. Specifically foods such as whole grain carbohydrates, for example, and some of the starchy vegetables. And so it makes sense that that's going to have potentially had an impact on your gut microbiome. So what do we want to do about that? Well, we want to be making sure that you're getting that balance. You've always got to remember that this idea and this concept of a balanced diet isn't just there because someone drew a plate model one day and went, oh, it would look really nice if I divided it. That's not how it came about. You know, we know that this balance is important for so many reasons, but it's not always shared. And some of those reasons are to do with the diversity of your diet. And the more diverse diet you've got, the more variety that you've got within that diet, the better that is for your gut bacteria and how your digestive system functions. So if you have been somebody who's restricted down to a few safe foods, then that's not going to be helping in the long term. And that could be the same for somebody who is binge eating. It could be that you binge eat, but you focus on certain food groups all the time, and that there are other foods that are unsafe and they're off limits, or you're just not eating them routinely and regularly. So yes, absolutely. We know that it can definitely impact your gut microbiome and therefore how your whole digestive system and your gut health is.
Yeah, I think it's so true, isn't it? Kind of the lack of diversity with restriction. But then my brain was also thinking there about, you know, it's like a double-edged sword again, because you want to then introduce more foods into your diet, but then often they might be foods that your body might struggle to digest. And then you get the bloating and the IBS-like symptoms. So it's a very difficult thing. But I think, like you said, it's unfortunately something that you need to go through as part of your recovery. And I always try and think, you know, of all the people that I know that have been through it, it does get better. And, you know, that it's not like these symptoms last forever, but the more that you kind of bounce between restriction or eating normally or binging and eating normally, the longer those symptoms then last. So it's almost, you have to just crack on, but it's so difficult to do that in the moment.
So difficult. You know, as somebody who has a digestive disorder, I know how uncomfortable the bloating is, and it's not nice to have to go through that most days. And it's also not nice to have someone telling you that you're making it up or it's all in your head. It's not necessarily like most people will know when they're bloated or they're distended, which is where you can visibly see that, you know, perhaps your stomach has got bigger, your clothes are uncomfortable. Some other tips with bloating would be to actually wear looser clothing. So if you're wearing something that really pulls you in, then that actually isn't helpful. So allowing your body to have that space to breathe, getting into your comfy loungewear is a good idea. Also making sure that you chew really well, because by chewing, we're helping to break our food down. It's going to help with digestion. Now, I'm not suggesting that you sit there for hours chewing your food. We've also got to make sure that that doesn't become another disordered behavior, but making sure that you are chewing enough and you're not just inhaling your food is important, and that you're giving yourself enough time to eat your food. We don't want a meal taking an hour, but we also don't want it taking 10 minutes. So, you know, we're taking 20 minutes over lunch, for example, chewing well, being in a calm environment if possible. That could be making sure that you're away from your desk if you're at work, that you're, I quite often go in the garden to eat my lunch. So I take my little break. I can look at something beautiful that's around me, take a breath of fresh air. You know, doing little strategies like that can be really helpful with those types of symptoms.
I think that's the really important thing is, you know, it's taking that time out to have your food and really kind of giving yourself effort. You know, life can be so busy and chaotic, but kind of, you know, connecting with the food that you're eating is so much more important, not just for recovery, but, you know, for the mind-body connection in general. So it's been absolutely lovely to chat to you, and thank you so much for all your insights. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Oh, you've been so lovely to chat to. So thank you so much for having me on. So people can find me over on my website. So that's www.dietitianuk.co.uk. And that's dietitian with all T's and no C. I would like to point that one out. And then you can also find me on social media. I'm mainly on Instagram, and I am at Priya_Chu. And I'm always very happy to have a chat in my DMs. So I am quite accessible and there and chatty. I love to chat. So please do come and find me and let's connect.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Priya. It's been lovely.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.